Yeah, I'm recording this live from a portaloo in Bognor Regis, so you're welcome.
If you're still listening, this is our final transmission.
Oh, we're here, Jamie.
We are here, Sam. How are you?
I am fucking fantastic. How's your hammer hanging?
It's hanging, swinging. How do hammers hang normally?
Swinging in the breeze. Normally they're tastefully mounted at the back of a shed on a nice piece of MDF with a firm clip fastening.
I think that I would like to be tastefully mounted.
Your wish is my command. Welcome to the Final Transmission podcast, where I, Sam Russo, and my good chum, Jamie Carruthers,
hello,
friends of brothers and mothers. We are covering another movie today, and we're covering the movie Eden Lake.
Yes. Now, if you follow us on social media, which you should, at FT Horror Show, you may have noticed that a couple of weeks back, off the back of our Borderlands episode, I did like a quick top five list of some of my favourite British horror movies of the 2000s and the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie was on it, Sam.
It was high up too.
Yeah. I mean, it was top five. So
it's innately high.
So I was keen to throw it on the list, put you through the same ringer, and see what you think of Eden Lake.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about it. I think it's a 2008 horror movie that is 1 hour and 31 minutes long. And that's all I can say without spoilers, basically. It's got Michael Fassbender in it, which was a really pleasant surprise, and Kelly Riley, who I always think is someone else.
Yeah, this is my first Fassbender experience.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, I saw this at Fright Fest. So I guess it was the premiere. Premiere, are we saying that? I guess so.
Yeah.
Premiere.
I say
premiere. Had he done much work before this?
Fassbender? Yeah, man, he was everywhere. He's a big theatre guy.
I only go to small theatres.
I mean, I guess his career probably started around the late 90s, early noughties, I would imagine. He has, this is in no way saying he's unattractive, but he has a face that's older than his years, I think. And that's, sometimes a little misleading.
So I'm looking at his IMDb here. And prior to Eden Lake, he had been in not much, a bunch of shit British TV, including Holby City.
Ooh.
He's in Band of Brothers, like literally every British actor ever.
Yeah.
And I guess he's in 300, although I don't remember him in 300 at all.
Probably a background dude. I don't know.
Yeah. And then like
German-Irish.
A bunch of other stuff. German-Irish.
Interesting.
Yeah. The Oppressed and the Oppressor. Can we say that? Is that allowed?
No, we fucking can't. Jesus Christ. Okay, so that's Fassbender. Do you like him in Macbeth? The Fassbender Macbeth? I think it's the best thing he's ever done.
I don't know if I've ever seen Fassbender Macbeth.
Big fan. Again, I know I only say this when it's true, but one of the very few movies I've ever bought on Blu-ray. Do you like him in the Alien movies, in Prometheus and all that, where he's the robot guy? His name's David or something.
David Utane.
He also plays a character called Walter.
I don't, because I don't like those movies.
Not even Covenant?
Not even Covenant.
Covenant rips, though. It's got fucking your boy in it.
My boy.
It's got Danny McBride. It's got Billy Crudup.
Does anyone care about Billy Crudup?
I love Billy Crudup. Are you kidding me? I care about him a lot.
I don't.
I'd smooch his skinny little butt. I think he's great.
I don't like when actors like Danny McBride are in films like Alien.
Really? You don't like comedy guys?
Feels wrong to me. I mean, it's not even... It's like in Alien Resurrection, where it's the Hellboy. What's his fucking name?
Ron Perlman.
There's just like a genre of guy... And I think that Ron Perlman and Dan McBride are in the same genre. And I just don't like them in my Alien movies.
Do you like him? Do you like Ron Perlman in Blade Trinity?
No, but I do like him in that one episode of The Tick with Patrick Warburton.
Ooh, nice. Do you like Ron Perlman in Drive?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, me too. Stick to Drive, Ron. I like him in everything. He can't fucking put a foot wrong as far as I'm concerned.
He had like a real period of being in like weird French movies, which were cool. Like The City of Lost Children. I don't think he is French. Oh, I think he just was favoured by Marc Caro, Jean-Pierre Jeunet set of directors and got a bunch of work off the back of that.
You could have said any French names there and I would have nodded politely because I have no idea who anyone is. You could have been like Claude Michel Garabi and I'd be like, oh, of course.
Well, Jean-Pierre Jeunet directed Amelie.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And Marc Caro directed Delicatessen.
I will pretend I've heard of that also.
And I think they both directed The City of Lost Children.
The big question is, did either of them direct Eden Lake?
No, none of them directed Eden Lake. Eden Lake was directed by someone completely different. James Watkins.
Written by James Watkins.
Yeah, well, I like a writer-director
as
a concept. I think it is shows a linear idea and a commitment to an idea.
Yeah. There's something reassuring about it, right? You know, it hasn't been maybe as stepped on as a lot of movies that are just picked up as property after a billion drafts and, you know, potentially 10 years of sitting in a producer's filing cabinet or whatever.
Yeah, I think we know that this didn't sit for a long time in a producer's filing cabinet because it's really fucking timely.
Yeah.
In the year 2008, we were hot on the heels of some pretty big things in British culture around how scary children could be.
Okay.
Obviously,
what
like,
are we referring to?
Well, nothing really. Like in 2006, I think, is it 2006, 2005, when people started using the phrase chav?
Yeah, chav was popping.
Obviously, ASBOs were a big thing around then. If you're an American listening to this, an ASBO is an antisocial behavior order, and there were mostly ways for the police to penalize you for being a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, this had been brewing for a long time, a movie like this coming out of England for a million fucking boring, you know, reasons that we won't go into here. But, you know, ever since like key historical flashpoints like the Stephen Lawrence murder and you know, all these horrible fucking
Jamie Bulger public, and
yeah, all these, you know, heinous murders in this country, there's always a horrible, you know, layer of this like subtext that just leads you to believe, at least in the mainstream media, that kids have just inexplicably gone evil.
Yeah.
And I think that fuels a lot of people's fear around younger generations. And it's probably a thing. You know, I think the older generation always has some kind of fear of the younger. But we have, you know, a lot of media coming out at this time that is like, kids are going to fucking get you.
Well, I think that probably would also work as a synopsis. So, why don't we take a break and come back and spoil the fuck out of this movie?
Let's do that.
Cool.
Whoa! Holy shit. I guess that's why they call it Phantom Power.
Listen, Jamie, if there's one thing we can both agree on, it's that Red Scare looks after you. That's their main deal. They're always there for you. They've always got your back.
Yeah.
www.redscare.net when you need some love.
No matter what position you're in, they will help you. If you're feeling angry, they've got some angry shit for you. If you're feeling melancholic, they've got some sad shit. If you're feeling like you want to break into a car, there's Max Intruder. Like, it's all there. It's all there for you. If you feel like you want to drown yourself, you can jump into Lake Michigan with a sincere engineer. Like, Have a great time.
Very good.
All the time.
That's probably Red Scare's real motto, right? Have a good time all the time?
Yeah. I mean, I stole that from Spinal Tap, but Red Scare can have it.
They can have it from you. Then it's not stealing. Have a good time all the time. RedScareIndustries.net. I'm back. Are you back with me, Jamie?
I am back. In words of a different Insane Clown Posse lyric, I'm back like scoliosis.
Oh, there it is. Just continuing with the ICP lyrical references. Listen, let's plunge our heads into Eden Lake and take a big gulp of delicious English or Irish lake water. Where the fuck are they? Are they in England or Ireland?
They're in England because they've driven from London.
Ah, that makes sense. You can drive from London to... Well, you don't see them cross the sea. Anyway, they're in England and they are... So there's two main characters in this movie. Kelly Riley plays Jenny and Michael Fassbender plays Steve. And they're off for a romantic weekend by a lake that Steve's been to before but doesn't know anything about. And he's going to pop the question, we find out quite early. He's got a ring. We're thinking, you know, fucking under the stars, romance. It's going to be beautiful. What transpires? Pretty much the polar opposite. I'm not going to lie. I saw a lot of this coming a mile away.
Well, but, yeah, it's not like a mystery thriller, is it? It's like...
No, it's telegraphed, yeah.
Yeah, it's all telegraphed because it's... And I'll be interested to hear from, like, our American, Canadian, non-British listeners about whether it is as telegraphed to them.
Yeah.
Or whether that's part of the baggage of the Britishness.
Yeah, what if people are like, oh, that's a really cute Rottweiler.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I had Rottweilers my whole life growing up. And still, if I see someone else with a Rottweiler, I'm like, oh, fuck.
No, so when I was growing up, our first dog was an Alsatian.
Right, so same thing.
Called Max.
Right.
What do they call Alsatians now?
I don't know. Do they have a different name? German Shepherds?
German Shepherds.
Right.
Is that a war thing? Are we
at war?
Well, we were at one point with Germany.
Oh, interesting. tell me more. I distinctly remember people saying Alsatian in my lifetime, and I'm pretty sure I haven't lived through a war with Germany.
No, but I wonder if like there's a reason why people have shifted towards German Shepherd.
I tell you what, let's fucking jump out on a limb here. Alsatian, I bet it's something like from the Alsace region, and maybe there's just a breed variant.
Yeah, anything else is just sparkling dogs.
Do you know what? We don't... I got that reference. Fuck, I can't even speak. Okay, the Alsatian dialect is from the Alsace region of northeast France. I'm starting to get the impression here that a German Shepherd is just known in Britain as an Alsatian. A German breed of working dog of medium to large size.
So maybe the reason that we've moved away from Alsatian is because we've become more internationalized as a result of the internet.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, let's just say Brexit and move on. Anyway, tell me about your Alsatian and what kind of cultural baggage that comes with.
I don't remember what I was saying about Max, but he did go feral and tried to jump through our window and broke his neck.
Ah. Oh.
So just tried to jump through a pane of glass.
Jeez, that's
and just crippled himself. It was very bleak. He had like a fit and went insane.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I once fell through a conservatory.
I once fell through a, what's it called? A greenhouse.
That's pretty fucking hardcore. Was it one of the metal frame ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was late at night and I was going back to a girl's house and she'd forgotten her key. She'd somehow lost her key.
Right.
And that really put a dampener on things. So we were trying to find a way to get into her house. And it involved climbing over the back fence, and I just fell through her conservatory.
Fucking hell, that's amazing.
Which, I'm going to tell you, Sam, is a boner killer.
I thought it might be. You're lucky you're still equipped. That could have gone horribly wrong.
I lacerated a big chunk of my, like, top of my right thigh, and it is numb today. It's just been numb ever since.
Oh, it's so easy to become dead by falling through glass buildings.
Yeah. When you fell through a conservatory, what was, is there a story there?
It's really boring. I was playing football and I was running at full speed without looking where I was going, and everyone was screaming and I was like, here we go. And I looked up and just blasted through this conservatory at full speed, and I was completely unscathed. Not a nick, not a cut, not nothing. I just like fully fucking Kool-Aid man through a conservatory and into a house.
That could be a boring story, but luckily you've got a real knack
for laughing while I talk. Yeah, it felt very Jason-esque. You know, that's how Jason would go through a conservatory.
He would, but he would do it at a walking pace.
Yeah, true. Yeah, good point. So, back to Eden Lake. I too would be interested to see how much of the cultural nuance of our beautiful island nation makes its way into people's fear receptors, because everything about this scared the living fuck ass out of me. It fucking wired a tiny little electrode to every single nerve in my body and shocked and upset me from start to finish. So thanks for fucking ruining my night, Jamie. And I'm really keen to know if it's as scary to Americans or if it's like hillbillies for us. Like, I'm not scared of rednecks in horror movies, really.
No.
But fucking feral kids in the woods by a fucking quarry. Oh boy, well, I'm out.
I think that's the interesting thing about this, is that they're not feral. They're not like wrong turn, hills have eyes, like backwards, freaky deaky hillbillies. They're just unsupervised kids.
Yeah.
Who through a series of events, a series of like small escalations and, you know, being dickheads, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say, we were all dickheads when we were teenagers. When we think that we were justified, like we all did dickhead things. And like, it just escalates and escalates until it's the worst thing in the world. The worst thing...
Are you writing your cancellation apology speech right now? Is that what's happening?
No. No. I wrote that years ago.
Yeah. You had to get a lawyer to write that for you. The second I see Brett, I know what I'm dealing with, because you can tell his dad beats the fuck out of him. And I know what that does to a very specific kind of young person. And I know what's coming. There's going to be a flashpoint. There's going to be something that triggers the rage and the fire of a thousand suns. And he is going to tear shit down. So as soon as I saw him, his mannerisms, everything, I was like, you guys need to find a different beach.
That's like a real testament, I think, to like how good most of the performances are in this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Brett is amazing. What's his name?
Jack O'Connell.
Jack O'Connell from Skins, if you're a Skins fan. He's incredible. Thomas Turgoose does his kind of Thomas Turgoose performance that we've seen a million times at this point, because we're British and we end of Clockwork Orange forced to watch Shane Meadows films while Beethoven pays.
He's the
plays.
He's the fucking Harry Potter of the edgy crowd. He's the what's that Harry Potter kid's name? David Walliams or some shit. What's his name?
Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah, Thomas Turgoose is the Daniel Radcliffe of edgy fucks. I think. Listen. If you are watching a movie from 2008 and Thomas Turgoose is the weakest actor in the cast, you are having a fucking whale of a time, a feast for the senses. There's so much incredibly menacing, horribly uncomfortable stuff in this movie. And it's a real credit to a small, tight cast.
Like, they really sell everything. The only person that I think is particularly weak is Kelly Riley as Jenny. And that's because she's meant to be a kind of a blank canvas until she's not. And when she goes feral herself, then things start getting interesting, I think, in terms of her performance.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that overnight, like how much of that is actually a great performance and how much of that is really just down to personal preference. Like, I don't really like her character, but I can kind of separate that from the performance element, and I've seen her in other stuff, and I know that she's got pretty huge range. She's great at the start because she's kind of winsome. She's kind of like, I don't know, she's a little bit ditzy's maybe a little bit cruel because she's obviously quite smart. But there's something there that's a little bit nothingy.
Yeah.
And it slowly builds and fleshes out, and then you get to see this full, like, you know, revelatory moment where she becomes something different. But I think there's no point in the movie where I don't believe her performance. I mean, I don't believe some of the stuff that they do in this movie, but I don't, you know, I'm wholly convinced by her portrayal of Jenny.
Is the thing that you don't believe that they do, is it attaching your phone to somebody else's phone via Bluetooth in order to ring 999?
That is a technique I'm not familiar with. Even as an ex-BlackBerry user, I'm not 100% sure what was happening there. Listen, there's loads of shit that she does that makes no sense. There's also quite a bit of stuff that Fassbender does that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But all of it escalates and progresses the story, so I buy it. You know, the movie is good enough and strong enough for me to buy some seriously dumb behavior.
Yeah.
So the main thing I can't relate to, I'll save our listeners all the details. I don't believe they didn't leave immediately. That's the only thing I don't believe. You see those kids, you fucking bounce immediately. You get in that fucking Land Rover and you're gone. We're like, going somewhere else.
Like, I think the film does quite a good job of showing that Steve is also like a pretty toxic, like masculine.
Oh my God, like, do you think so?
Ball of machismo.
Ooh, yeah. This is a read I hadn't picked up on. Tell me everything.
Well, so like he instigates quite a lot of the beef with the kids. He fucking sneaks into that house.
Yeah, not very believable.
Not very believable, but also that makes him the bad guy at that point.
You think so?
Yeah, well, what gives you the right, even if you were cut up by a load of kids on bikes?
Yeah.
What gives you the right to literally, like, again, like at this point, they're not murderers, they're just children.
Yeah.
What gives you the right to go to the house where you see their bikes, go inside, snoop around a bit, go upstairs, and then climb out of the window when their dad comes home?
Risky.
I mean, it's risky, but it's also, it's not the behavior of a good person.
I mean, oh, how can I defend this? He does do like a bit of a, hello, is anyone home? As he's like about to go in. And then by the time he's too far in, he can't go back because daddy's home and he has to run upstairs. So I kind of get it, but I also massively am with you. It's a really stupid thing to do.
Yeah. Like it's a great scene because it's like it ratchets up the tension really early on and it makes you realize that you're in the hands of a filmmaker that can deliver that sort of tension.
Yep.
Even when you're not really believing or understanding the motivation behind what's happening.
Yeah.
Like it means that you're in a place where you're like, oh God, this, we're in pretty safe, well, not safe hands, but we're in pretty good hands here in terms of delivering some scary shit.
Yeah. I mean, this was about the point in the movie where I started to physically writhe. I was just so uncomfortable. It's awful. The idea of just, I've definitely been in lots of places where I shouldn't have been and have nearly been detected and have had to make my way out. But the stakes here are so absurdly high and it's so, oh God, everything about it is just simmering from that moment onwards. So yeah, it's coming with a lot of loaded personal baggage here. Mm. But the second I saw those kids on that beach, I'd be gone without a single word. And yeah, I guess you're right. Like at first he doesn't confront them and he says, oh, it's just boys being boys or whatever. But the psychotic shit these kids are doing, eventually, goodbye, fare thee well, enjoy your life.
Yeah, like they should have been more careful when they first got the car back.
Mm.
They should have been more careful at that point and driven out rather than driving into a spike and impaling Steve.
Do you think you would say that to Jenny's face after? Do you think you'd be like, here's what you should have done?
I feel like Jenny's face, big, big spoiler alert, does not make it out of that bathroom.
No, I don't think she survives for a sequel. I mean, fucking hell. I don't even know where to start with this film because the whole time I just wanted to rip my own stomach open and unspool my guts. This was harder for me than Martyrs.
Wow.
This made Martyrs feel like a flight of fancy.
Yeah, I think because it's much more real than Martyrs. I mean, it's not real. But the points, it starts at a real place and then it escalates into an insane place.
Yeah, but it feels very close to home.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I like to consider myself, you know, a fairly well-rounded, liberally minded, from a working class background kind of guy, right?
Yeah, sexual depravities aside, yeah.
Of course. But I live in an area in Liverpool which is not historically known as a good area.
Okay. This sounds so like knocking on the door political candidate speech. Go on, carry on.
Basically, I live in an area in Liverpool where people talk about people getting jumped and murdered in the street fairly regularly.
Mans get murked.
Yeah, like I was sort of browsing my like Reddit home page, and because I'd engaged with some posts about the area where I live, I get quite a lot of stuff like that in my feed, and there's loads of stuff about people being jumped and people getting murdered and stuff like that. And like, so obviously teenagers fucking scare me.
Yeah. I mean, we have a very special kind of teenage violence in this country because, I mean, guns are on the rise, but historically, we are a toe-to-toe Stanley knife, box cutter, dagger, fucking miniature samurai sword, letter opener, whatever sharp object a kid can get hold of. That's what they're fucking attacking you and other people with. And that is just terrifying.
Yeah.
So that kind of violence, you know, when it's teed up in this way in a film, when it's mere yards away from a very soft-looking couple, you know, despite Fassbender's absolutely shredded physique, they still appear very soft to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, from the moment they lay down on that beach, there's just this inescapable doom because they don't do it right.
Yeah.
They confront it, they get stuck in, and bad things happen.
I have to say that they do a really good job of like untoughifying Fassbender.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's very subtle the way they do it, but like they make him a scuba diver.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
And it's just like, yeah, no scuba diver in my head is like a fucking fighter.
I don't know. Scuba divers are pretty tough, but like amateur English / Irish enthusiast
literally,
scuba divers who are like, look at the bottle I found on this lake or whatever.
Yeah. It's really clever. Just like, no one's picturing Jack Cousteau as a fucking put up your jukes kind of guy. So
no one's
like,
fighting in flippers.
Yeah.
No one's going toe to toe with a kid a yard away because they're wearing diving flippers.
Flipper to flipper.
Yeah. Wherein lies the first fatal error, do you think? When is the point of no return for this lovely couple?
When the dog dies?
Yeah, that's a big whoops, I stabbed your dog in the neck.
Again, he didn't really stab the dog in the neck.
No.
The dog jumped on the knife.
Yeah.
But, you know, these kids aren't exactly reasonable.
They're not exactly listening to reason at this point.
No.
And something tells me they are fucking looking for a tear-up. And as soon as Brett feels affronted in any way, Fassbender's as good as dead.
Yeah, I think, like, obviously, they could have a fight and, like, maybe they would kick him in the head a few times. Like, the kids would kick Fassbender in the head a few times and then fuck off.
Mm.
But, like, when the dog dies, there's no coming back from that.
Nope, gloves are off.
Yeah, although he's got another perfectly good dog at home. But
true,
yeah,
as we find out later.
Yeah.
But what's Bonnie without Clyde, or Clyde without Bonnie, whatever?
I think Clyde would be fine without Bonnie. Bonnie wouldn't do very well without Clyde.
Maybe that's the sequel. What happens to Clyde the dog? Yeah. He definitely ends up eating Jenny's remains, I'll tell you that much. Tricky. Do you know what I love? the movie does really well is it starts laying these little tiny little breadcrumb trails at the beginning about, you know, the kind of moral ambiguity of standing in or stepping in, intervening when you see antisocial behavior or just generally inhuman behavior and cruelty. When the woman slaps the kid in the pub garden, that's a real fucking moment. When they don't do anything, they don't say anything, they ignore it. There's just so many clever little things that work for me as as an English viewer that make me think, fucking been there, done that, seen that, you know.
It does that really well as well, because it's like Fassbender's character, Steve, is in the middle of saying that kid needs a slap, and then the kid gets a slap, and it's like, yeah, in London, us poshos, we say stuff like that, but we don't really mean it, and we're horribly affronted by this thing happening in front of us. Not enough to actually say anything.
Exactly.
I don't quite understand what the film is trying to say about class or encroaching on in areas where we don't necessarily belong, or because obviously Jenny and Steve are outsiders. They've come from London to this place where things are different and things are done differently. And like that's that, and we see that play out. And there's also the filled in quarry that is being taken over and developed by like outside developers. So like I don't understand what the morality is around that, what we're trying to say about that.
It definitely introduces an interesting theme, because they're all trespassing. I thought the theme of trespass was pretty strong. It's clear that the community isn't happy about the development, because there's that spray paint on the other side of the sign. Fuck off, yuppies, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the way I read it, I try and see this movie as like a territorial movie. And it seems to me, and I could be completely wrong here, but because both of these groups, both Jenny and Steve as a couple and the group of kids, are somewhere they shouldn't be, there's this lawlessness that's all very Lord of the Flies. Like it's a kind of amoral hinterland for now, because it's between being a spot of natural beauty and a yuppie fuckplex. So I think that means there are no rules in this place, but then the kids are more in tune with that and lean into it more, whereas Steve and Jenny didn't get the message. And then when they get back into town, there's a very set code, and it's all about, you know, us against them. We look after our own, etc., etc. But I, you know, again, I've had one night's sleep on this, very, very fitful and restless sleep.
Yeah,
and that's the conclusion I came to, sort of subconsciously, I think. Either way, if it is saying anything about class, what I hope it's saying is, we are fundamentally a class-based society, aren't we? We're fucked. We're fucked by it. We always have been. It's hamstrung us for centuries. What I hope it's saying is that there is an erosion of that class system that is really hard to define, that makes class harder to define, because, you know, obviously rich people can be psychos and can do absolutely horrible inhuman things to other people. And in this movie in particular, these kids aren't put across as being like massively deprived or poor kids in any way that have gone bad. They're, Brett's obviously horribly abused, but there's nothing super clear cut about class here that tells us where we stand. And I quite like that. I think it's telling us that there's some vagary in 2008.
I mean, I think it's pretty on the nose about the class thing. Like when the dad comes home and Steve's in the house, he's got a big bag full of like bottles.
Booze. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we've come back from work and I'm just going to get drunk.
But it's a fucking big house, and they are having an enormous party there at the end with a massive fucking bouncy castle.
Yeah, that's true. I wondered a little bit about the moralizing of the film and like what the film's trying to say is. So when the film came out, it was described as like a Daily Mail reader's like worst nightmare. It's like...
Yeah, okay, I see that a bit, yeah.
And I wonder if like that's on purpose and it's meant to be like, this is what's scary to Daily Mail readers, but you're watching it and you're, you know, this liberally minded, like upstanding person that isn't like a reactionary gammon who reads the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
But you're scared by this. So maybe you need to examine some of your own prejudices.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm, from my point of view, which is all I can really talk about with any kind of certainty, I'm more scared of a huge portion of Cambridge University students and what they're capable of when they're fucking cornered. Do you know what I mean? The stories I've heard. I'm equally terrified of all psychos. And I know, all I know is that, you know, horribly abused teenage kids out in the woods are going to be a fucking handful if you confront them 9 times out of 10. If you corner people who are used to being cornered and abused and fighting their way out of those kind of situations, you're going to die. That's
yeah.
Maybe whether that's a prejudice view or not, I don't really know. But it's definitely a self-preservationist view. It's not going to make me treat people differently. It's going to make me navigate tense, violent situations in a different way. And when you're just watching it play out on screen and you're just screaming, leave, go somewhere else, I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. It is odd that they do choose to stay there, given that there's no real reason for them to be there beyond that Steve liked it one time when he went snorkeling or something.
Yeah, it's one thing on a long list of things I don't believe in terms of character motivation. Like, he wants to propose there, sure, but fucking why? It's a, what's it called? It's called like Slap Fanny Quarry or something. Like, yeah. Why do you want to propose there?
Yeah, and like, she doesn't have any particular relation to it. She's never been there. He just likes it. So like,
didn't grow up there or anything.
Yeah, so it's just, it's a bit of an odd choice.
It is bizarre. I think it's a location.
I mean, it does mean that you can have these incredibly horrible things taking place in a really, really beautiful section of the UK that looks amazing, and you can juxtapose these horrible things with these amazing drone or helicopter shots or however they did them.
Yeah, it makes sense as a location because it's woodland meets water and not so far from civilization that you feel like they're out in the middle of the, you know, in Pembrokeshire or something. Like they're close, they're tantalizingly, upsettingly close to like a fucking housing estate.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many times you've done this. You've been what you thought is lost out in some woods and 2 seconds later you're at a spa shop. Like, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And that makes it horribly fucking real. You know, these aren't like campers stranded on Dartmoor. It's not that kind of terror. It's the, you'll be in someone's back garden if you just make the right turn and go 10 yards in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's horrible. So yeah, a lot of things in this movie I don't believe in terms of the whys of the characters, but I also don't want to spend fucking time talking about why. I don't want him to be like, we're staying here because. He does give that one speech where he's like, I'm not going to be scared off by kids, which I understand. I think everyone has that, you know, it's one way or the other in that situation, isn't it? You're either leaving or you're staying. And if you're leaving, you have been kind of scared off. And if you're not, your pride is keeping.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean about like Steve's like machismo or his bravado or whatever. Sure. Like he's a little bit, he at least thinks of himself as like too tough to engage with the kids properly. Although he does say, can you turn your sounds down? Which makes him sound like the absolute oldest man in the world trying to like, how do you do, fellow kids? Like,
well, the kids do inexplicably have a tape boombox, which I thought was pretty funny. A nice touch. Yeah, I think what he does that's quite real is he tries to reason with them, which is what, let's say I'm forced to deal with that situation. I can't leave for some reason. Yeah, what I'm doing is I'm going in, you know, fairly low key, and then I'm building up to assertive. And that's exactly what he does.
Yeah.
So I find that whole interaction really believable. I think the reason I wasn't putting any value judgments on him at that moment was that I was just too scared of what was going to happen to him. I almost like zoned out what he was saying.
Yeah.
And just waited for him to be dead.
When we get to the scene where he's like tied up with barbed wire and they're all taking it in turns to stab him a bit for the camera phone.
Yeah.
Was that a reasonable escalation to you in terms of the movie, or were you like, this is bonkers?
Nope, 100%. I thought that was exactly what was going to happen to him. I knew he was going to get tortured. Knowing what I know about that kind of stuff, I knew that they were probably going to, there's going to be some sort of like initiation rite going on. I did think exactly that they were going to do that. They were going to take turns stabbing him. I didn't see the fire coming. That was an escalation I had not backed up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
and there are a few
bleak
things that, yeah, it goes to such heights, but I didn't feel like any of it was absurd, to be honest. I thought this could be something that you would read about.
Yeah.
And it's thought it was all very realistically portrayed as well, the stabbing in particular.
Yeah, it's worth, again, for non-British listeners or people who are maybe just younger than us, in around sort of 2006, 2007 time, there was this thing in the UK that was called happy slapping.
Yeah.
Where teenagers would just run up to people and slap them really hard in the face.
Yeah.
While filming it on their camera phones, which, you know, maybe seems kind of tame now in like TikTok prank world where we live. But like, it was absolutely the beginning of that. And it was the most violent way for that to begin.
Yeah.
And this is just, you know, an extrapolation on that, I think. Just like film yourself stabbing a man because he killed a dog. Or like, I mean, you know, you have to do this and we're filming it. I mean, when they're filming it, he's also being like, you have to do this because we're filming it, which is they're filming that. So if anyone watches it, they're not going to be like, oh, he stabbed them and they filmed it. They're going to be like, oh, he made them stab them. And then they filmed all of it because he's fucking thick as pig shit.
Yeah, that is Brett's undoing. He is fucking thick. The thing about happy slapping, I think, is and was that it was always used as an excuse to provoke some sort of enormous fight. You know, it's a tale as old as time that a kid will come up to you and do something, and if you react, 50 fucking kids come swarming out the underpass and you're as good as dead.
Yeah.
It's always the way. When it happened to me maybe 5 times when I was a kid, and they would use every sneaky trick in the book, and it's still a thing. It still happens.
Yeah, I think we've talked about before that, like, I was bullied quite badly, but I was also much bigger than a lot of the kids that were bullying me.
Yeah.
And so I would beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And they would love it. They'd be like, ha, ah, we've got Jamie to fight. And
yeah, then, exactly.
But then, like, I was getting called into the headmaster's office for, like, bullying.
Yeah.
Because I was obviously coming out better than them because I was, you know, twice the size of them.
Yeah. I think my favorite, that this is the one I have the most respect for. We used to have band practice in a youth center. And kids would just show up and try and fight us. And they would always just like find a way in and just like start fucking with, like, just unplug your guitar while you were playing. That's how you'd see them there. Or just outright start on you. But one time we were playing in front of these huge plate glass windows. And this girl just walked up to them and released her breasts, should we say, and pressed them against the window. And I looked at those breasts.
Oh, God.
The second I looked, some guy burst around the corner of the practice room and shouted, "Are you looking at my girlfriend's tits?" To which I said, "Yes." And he beat the fuck out of me for looking at his girlfriend's tits that he put in front of my face.
Yeah.
It was a very artful lure. And what Brett lacks is the creativity to do something like that, I think. That was one of the worst fucking gotchas I ever experienced in my life. I mean, that guy ultimately got beaten unconscious with a keyboard during that scrap, but it wasn't by me. So yeah, this shit happens, and it's so woven into our like baseline fears that you just feel it, you see it coming, and it's agony. I really hope someone from fucking, you know, Texas or somewhere has an equivalent experience they can tap into so they feel as uncomfortable during this movie as I did.
Well, I feel like, obviously, Shane is a movie and is not real, but like the pick up the gun bit in Shane.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely the same thing, right? It's absolutely like, I want to feel justified in this moment.
I want to know what happens to Brett after the events of this movie, because when he popped those aviators on at the end, I thought, that's how they're going to get him. There's going to be fucking DNA in the aviators or something. No,
DNA
end credits. New from Ray-Ban, DNA aviators.
I think there's the moment when they've stolen the car, right, and he's wearing the Ray-Bans and he does a little skid. I feel like that's maybe the coolest anyone's ever looked in a British movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of good bike skids, very ET-esque bike skids. I mean, this movie is pretty gorgeous to look at times. Sometimes it does that horrible, shitty, washed out, low budget English movie thing visually, but for the most part, pretty great. And again, I'm so scared the whole time. I don't fucking care what it looks like. I'm hiding.
Yeah. I think, like, it's hard to shoot the British countryside and have it not look incredible.
Really? I did not think you were going to say that. I thought you were going to say it's hard to shoot the British countryside and make it look tolerable. It looks like fucking grey shit half the time.
I think the British countryside, particularly where they are, it's beautiful. It's a wonderful place.
Well, fucking tell a director from time to time, because it always looks like shite. It always looks fucking crap.
Yeah, well, that's directors doing the colour grading thing that they feel like they have to do.
Well, stop it.
Like, yeah, absolutely stop
it. If you're going to like the Outer Hebrides and you're making it look shite, try a different fucking career is my advice. Where is this shot as well, by the way? Because it's supposed to be warm. It looks fucking brassic the whole time.
It's near Slough, which is...
Fucking knew it.
It's pretty on the nose, really, because Slough is like very close to some really affluent areas. It's quite close to Windsor. It's quite close to Reading. But it's also a shithole with like some really fancy bits, and also like right on the cusp of like some beautiful countryside. So there's some Slough.
Obviously, like,
go on.
I was just going to say the most like culturally significant thing in, you know, at least for millennials would be that The Office is set in Slough, the original British Office. Yeah.
And like the John Betjeman poem is what I think of when I think of Slough.
Also referenced in The Office.
Well, yeah, I think that might have been my first, like, my introduction to it. But, like, yeah, that's what I think of.
Yeah, Slough. I mean, you're exactly right. It's a real borderland between some stunning natural beauty and some very grey pebble dash, you know, miles of grey.
And it's, like, it's one of those places that just sounds shit.
Yeah, it's unfair, isn't it? But a lot of places in England / Great Britain have really shit names, and they're not as bad as their names.
Like, think about Bognor Regis. Like,
Bognor Regis sounds rank. Skegness sounds like a shithole. It's actually really nice.
Yeah, well, so is Bognor. Like,
yeah.
Like, loads of places have, like, quite fancy names and aren't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Weston-super-Mare.
Yeah.
Not as cool as it sounds. Tunbridge Wells. Nowhere near as cool as it sounds.
Weston-super-Mare is such a funny name for a place, because
isn't it?
A mare is a kind of horse. Horses are in westerns. Like,
oh my God, our western's going to be called Western Supermare.
Yeah.
Through our fucking horse. Oh my God. I have to apologize to our listeners if I sound like I'm on the verge of tears the whole time that I'm talking. I'm having real vocal problems.
Sam's on the toilet.
I am, yeah. I'm recording this live from a portaloo in Bognor Regis. So you're welcome. So what else is there to say about this absolute firestorm of horror?
Let's talk about some of the actual violent scenes.
Okay.
Because we've sort of skirted around it a little bit, but like that extended scene of Steve getting tortured, he's tied up, they're all taking it in turns to stab him, it is so tense and so horrible and so unflinching. Like, it's just, it might as well just be like a one camera that's just on his face the whole time. And he's Michael Fassbender, so he's acting his entire dick off. And like, it's incredible. It's he gets a fucking Stanley knife in the mouth at one point.
When Tommy Turgoose bangs that fucking Stanley in his gob and just rattles it around, I wanted to leave my house. I was not happy.
Yeah. That's what... If you're American, by the way, that's what it feels like eating pickled onion and Monster Munch.
Yes, it absolutely, 100%. And I actually had some people in America asking me about pickled onion Monster Munch recently. That's what it's like, chewing a fucking Stanley. Oh, by the way, a Stanley knife is like a box cutter, I guess.
Yeah. We call him Stanley because he's got a moustache. I don't know.
I love saying, I don't know, after a joke that doesn't land. It makes it 10 times funnier. It's brilliant.
What do you mean that joke didn't land?
Fassbender's getting stabbed up and it's horrible. It's not too long. That doesn't make it extra horrible. I think it's really well paced. It's just upsetting. It's just, it's horribly graphic and really sweaty viewing. Like, I was wringing wet by the end of that scene. It was awful and not in a good way.
Yeah, there's also... I mean, we haven't mentioned it at all yet, but I think the worst thing that ever happens to anyone in any film I've ever seen happens in this movie.
Oh, God, what?
So, again, when I first saw this, I was at Fright Fest. It was a sold-out cinema. It was back when they only had one screen. And the feeling in the room when 500 people or however many people all experienced her running over that thing.
Yeah.
Like rolling her ankle, getting a spike through the foot. It was one of the most electric rooms I've ever been in. It was like,
oh my God.
It felt like the whole room shuddered under like the weight of everybody wincing.
Yeah. I can imagine that in a cinema being visceral. Yeah. I tell you what, it didn't land when I was watching it because I immediately turned to Claire and went, "Oh, Lynn, I've pierced my foot on a spike." But yeah, brutal. And the way she got it out was exactly in my head how I was thinking, you're going to have to kick that against something and it's going to be horrible. And she pulls it out like thick end first, makes the hole bigger. You know, one thing I don't like in movies, and I would like someone who's experienced some kind of horrible piercing trauma to write to me and tell me how this feels. You know, when you pull out an object.
I do know, yeah. Pulled out many objects in my time.
I always pull out. When you pull an object out of your body that's been forced in there.
Again, I have some experience in this area.
Is there any sense of relief? Because they always play it off in movies like, oh, I pulled it out. I bet it fucking hurts 20 times more when you pull it out.
Absolutely, because like the wound can now just bleed freely, right?
Yeah, bleed freely. All the fucking nerve endings are going insane. There's a hole in your body where once there was not. And the surely like the pain sensation of dragging it through your flesh and popping out the other side, there's no relief there. That must just make it worse.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be better off kicking it through as far as it'll go and then snapping it off.
Yeah, just carrying on with a fucking, like, rock steady, you know, spike on the end of your foot. Use it as a weapon.
Yeah.
It's brutal. It's a horrible scene.
When she gets in the bin, I can smell that bin.
Oh, God, I can fucking taste it. I can feel it on my skin. Oh, brown. Horrible. Yeah.
I don't know why she's so muddy when she comes out, because there's just like a thin layer of mud on the bottom of the bin, which, you know, stinks.
It looks deep to me. I think she's submerged in there. But
oh, really? Okay.
I really did want her to go Arnie and Predator after that, though, and just smear herself with filth and start, well, like, stealthily picking them off.
She kind of is and does.
She does get turgoose.
She does get turgoose and immediately regrets it.
Yeah. Again, I don't know how much I believed that, because I think she'd fucking love it by that point.
Well, I think she sort of realizes that he's like, miss, because he's not.
Yeah,
with,
true.
He's
yeah.
not
she
with
does
Brett.
Kill the wrong kid. Yeah. Yeah. She definitely.
Yeah, the wrong kid died.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're gonna ram a shot, I'm glad she made the fucking shiv. I was screaming at her the whole movie to fashion a weapon of some kind, and when she does the old rip a bit of your dress off and wrap it around glass, I was very proud of her.
Yeah. I think her stabbing Turgoose isn't like her most brutal moment in the film. I think the kid that like leads her to Brett.
Yeah.
Who is like, if you leave, we'll kill him. And she's like, you know, fuck you, and leaves. And then they set his head on fire. And you see it in like a fleeting shot of just him wiggling around with his head on fire. Fucking hell.
Listen, you know that we love people being on fire.
Yeah.
But when they set that kid on fire, even I thought, fucking heck, that's going a bit far, boys.
Yeah, because it's not like, it's not Kane Hodder in a beekeeper costume, like running through a plate glass window. It's like, it's completely different to that. It feels so real.
It's a nice little nerd. He's out, like, catching bugs or something, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that coming either, which is why it was extra, extra kick up the asshole. Just fucking pour the petrol on him and set his head on fire. Fuck off. That was horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That was a real, like, I didn't think I could feel sicker moment. And I did.
Well, yeah, it's horrible. And then, obviously, she escapes, she steals the Eggsy from the good-looking Chains car, whoever the fuck he is, and drives
he's
into...
He's in Ted Lasso, he's good in that. He's good
he
in
is,
Ted Lasso.
Yeah, it's that guy. It's the British DJ Qualls.
Who's that?
He's in, like, Boat Trip and stuff.
You
know
deserve better than me, Jamie. I'm rubbish at...
You know who DJ Qualls is? He's in The New Kid. Do you remember The New Kid?
No.
You'll know him. He's a skinny little dweeby American actor.
I feel like I've never lived when I'm around you.
Let me find something that DJ Qualls is in that you'll know. DJ Qualls. It's in the game. He was in Road Trip, not Boat Trip.
Oh, I love Road Trip. That kid.
Little nerdy, his head's...
Wait, you trying to tell me he's a DJ?
No, that's his name. His name is
DJ. Oh. Well, that's where Grandpa was confused. Okay, got ya. Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Tom Green, Road Trip. Good times.
Yeah.
After the movie Eden Lake, I laid face down on the carpet and groaned for about 15 minutes, whereas I bet you probably had a fucking margarita and a hot dog.
Yeah, I didn't have a margarita and a hot dog, but I did maybe watch an episode of Monk.
Nice. All right, that's a good bounce back. Although the new fucking Monk stuff is horribly bleak, right?
I've not watched any new Monk stuff.
Oof, okay. I'll no spoilers. Wait till you get there. Holy crap, you'll know.
Okay.
We haven't talked about Kelly Riley.
She's no Tommy Riley. I'll tell you that.
Who's Tommy Riley?
Tommy Riley is a Scottish singer-songwriter who won Orange Unsigned in like 2011 or something.
Fucking these references. You're killing me, Jamie. You're killing your father.
You'll know and love Tommy Riley. He's got a song called Give Me a Call. He's got a stupid Scottish accent. Give me a call. You got a phone, don't you? Turn it on.
Fucking hell. I don't want to know this. This is stuff my brain doesn't want.
I ended up watching that series of Orange Unsigned because my friend's band were on it.
Right.
They were called Out From Animals. They used to be the Wayriders. But I watched it because they were on it. And Tommy Riley was so good that I voted for him instead.
Whoa, you fucking bailed on your boys.
Yeah.
Heck, wow.
But anyway,
I had a buddy who was on T4's Musical. Do you remember that show?
No.
Oh, my friend Darren was on that. And we went to see it live. And I asked Edith Bowman if I could buy her a drink. And she said, it's a free bar. Goodbye. And walked away.
Free bar, though.
Yeah, great. Great free bar. Yep.
That would work if she was into you. If you said it with the right swagger as well, like an eye contact that says, we both know it's free bar, buy you a drink.
Yeah, I think that's what I was aiming for. And then afterwards, I also found out she was pregnant at the time.
Yeah.
Smooth move.
That'll happen. Smooth
offer
move.
Offer to buy the pregnant celebrity a drink at a free bar. Moving on, we're back in Eden Lake. And everything's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, so what I think is interesting is that this is all about circumstance, right? So, like, the sort of the degrees of escalation with the kids. Obviously, the kids are shitheads. And, like, when you start from a position of shitheads, the sort of slow, circumstantial escalation feels natural, even when it's crazy. And it's exactly the same with the parents. Like, the parents are just as bad.
Yep.
They are put in a situation where they don't have all the facts and just know that some fuckery has happened and some kids are dead. When she steals the guy's car and just rams into Paige in a different movie where I don't think she's a piece of shit, Kelly Riley's character.
Yeah.
In a different movie, I'm punching the air at that moment.
Yeah.
But I'm not punching the air in this movie.
Are you not? What was your response?
It's just like fuck. Everything is fucked, right? They are just kids. I know.
Yeah,
that...
I still liked it. I wasn't quite punching the air, but I definitely went fucking of it. I was really angry by that point. I wanted all those fucking kids dead. I really did.
Yeah, I think you can't kill Brett because that undermines the movie.
Yeah, I didn't stop me wanting him dead. And that's, again, like, the movie did that so well. You know he can't die. You know it's like he's going to be the little smarmy fucker that gets away with it and probably goes on to be a banker. But you still want his head popped.
Yeah. So, yeah, the stuff with the parents. Sean Dooley is great as well. Tiny role. Really good.
Tiny role, but fantastic. Every second he's on screen, I'm fucking trying to leave. The thing that was interesting to me watching this is I was watching it with somebody else, which very rarely happens for movies on this podcast, and I was talking the whole fucking time, which is what I do when I'm nervous. We were reacting quite differently to lots of things that were happening in the movie. Like when she ends up back at the house or at the house, there was a bit of an eye roll moment to my right, whereas I completely believed that. And the bit that I found harder to believe is that nobody rang an ambulance immediately after seeing her. The only thing where I had to suspend some disbelief was like, as soon as you see that woman, you're ringing an ambulance. It doesn't matter if you know what's wrong with her. Second she enters your vision, you're calling an ambulance. But these are a different breed. They don't do that. They pop on the couch. Yeah.
And she must stink as well. Like she's been rolling absolutely around humming in the bin shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a narrative convenience to keep her there for long enough to have the phone calls come in about the other dead kids.
While that's all capitulating and you can just hear it in the background, the sense of doom is absolutely inescapable.
Yeah, thick, the whole movie's just closing doom in on you.
Yeah, and she's alone now. You know that Steve's dead. You know that she's killed some fucking kids. And she's fucked. The only thing that's left to find out really is how she fucking dies. And just harrowing end scene. Horrible, horrible stuff. The whole, like, you know, the dad just taking charge and dragging her into the bathroom. It's wholly believable. Too fucking real, Jim Bob.
Yeah, it is real. Which, do you know the woman in the cafe when she's like, not my kid?
Yep.
Which kid do you reckon she's the parent of?
I hope she's fucking childless. Like, all we can hope for in this world is that that woman in this movie is childless. I really don't think it is any of her kids. I think it's all her mates' kids.
Because, like, I feel like that sums up so much of the movie for me when she's just like, not my kids. Oh, they're terrorizing you, big strong man like you. Like,
yeah. Well, you can't handle a little fucking few stab wounds. Can't handle being tied up with barbed wire and stabbed by a bunch of kids. What's the matter with you? Get a sense of humor.
Also, like, after he's been stabbed a bunch of times, what's her name? Jenny.
Yep.
She, like, puts him in the water. Why would you do that? Obviously, you're hiding, but that's the worst place.
Well, that was the moment that Claire shouted, infection, as loud as she could.
And then, like, yeah, she buries him under those leaves, but, like, leaves his head poking out.
Yeah, very Platoon. Again, just horrible shit. I hated it. I tell you, when Brett absolutely tees off and just beats the living fuck out of his mate and stamps him to death, I felt really validated because I saw that coming the moment he walked on screen. And the fact that Fassbender didn't doesn't mean he deserves to die, but it definitely means he fucking he needs to wise up, buddy. Like, that was always going to happen. That was in that kid from the beginning, and that's why you leave.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to gauge that as a third party that's not watching a film, which you know is a horror film.
Yeah.
The film's called Eden Lake. We don't know loads about it, let's say, going in. But, like, when you see the kids and you see Brett, you know it's not about some fucking gill monster crawling out of the lake, don't you?
Yeah. I had the luxury of only having seen the cover where Kelly Riley's in the foreground, kind of covered in blood, and I hadn't even noticed Brett in the background. So all I'd see, because obviously, like, I, you know, our listeners will know, I don't like to see anything about the movie before I see it. So there's a couple of different cover variants. Oh no, I found the one I've seen. It doesn't have a kid in the back. Well, it has a silhouette in the background.
Yeah.
So I just saw her drenched in blood, and I had no idea what the movie was about. No idea, even the loosest plot. So I went in just thinking, like, she's going to end up covered in blood, and that's all I knew. So the whole thing was just a horrible surprise for me.
It's a good movie, Sam.
It certainly is executed very, very well.
And so is Michael Fassbender.
Big time. And the fucking kid whose head they set on fire. Jesus.
Yeah. Why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back and finish off.
Let's do it.
Will you give it up, man? Nobody's out there. We're alone.
Oh no, there's somebody out there. I'm picking up all this crosstalk.
So, Sam, it sounds like you had quite a harrowing time watching old Eden Lake.
Yep, it was the worst. I didn't have what you would classically call fun, but I really enjoyed huge portions of this film, mainly because I'm at the point now where I understand that when someone is really upsetting me, they're doing a job really well.
I feel like so few horror movies are genuinely scary.
Yeah.
And like, there's, like I said before, very few things in the world are scary to me as children. Do you know that bit in Peep Show where they're calling Mark Clean Shirt?
Clean Shirt.
Like, yeah. Fucking hell, that gets me.
You're not a pedo, Mark. You're definitely not a pedo. Yeah, love it. Yeah, in an underpass. Fuck off.
Yeah. I was once mugged in Burnley by a scary teenager, but I had no money. It was before mobile phones were a thing. He was like, give me all your money. And I was like, I've got 30p. You can have it. And he was like, fuck off, mate. And ran away.
The victim flees. That's very Peep Show.
Well, he ran away. I didn't run away.
Oh, he ran away. Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, there's a unique and special kind of terror in an underpass that is captured even in comedy in Peep Show. There's an underpass literally just below me outside my house right now. And the only time I'm happy and comfortable is the dead of winter when it's 2 feet deep with water and nobody hangs out down there. The rest of the fucking time, I'm shitting my pants about what's going on in that fucking underpass because it is naughty shit, let me tell you.
We have an underpass near me. I'm going to find it on a map and I'm going to send you the location of it. And I would like you to tell the listeners what it is called on Google Maps.
Great. Send it to me. The underpass outside where I live now, by the way, in a very interesting and fortuitous narrative twist, is an underpass where I once had to hide for several hours because somebody told somebody else that I stabbed someone at a party when I didn't. So I had to fucking hide in there.
I know this story and I love it.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
I've sent you the Google Maps link.
Right. Let's have a look. Jamie, the underpass outside your fucking house. Oh, my God. It's called Murder Tunnel. That sounds like a fucking game show that should never exist.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Sam, it's not just a clever name.
Oh, dropping the Wayne's World on me. Yikes and ouch. Murder Tunnel? That sounds like somewhere Michael Fassbender would go on holiday.
It's the scariest thing.
No one's having any fun in a place called Murder Tunnel.
I think maybe people have had fun there. Depends what your idea of fun is.
Depends what you're into, right?
Yeah. Sometimes.
You like being murdered.
Well, some people might like murdering. Because it's not a one-man job, is it?
What, murdering someone?
Well, it takes two to...
Tango.
Tango. And
finger.
Yeah. Someone. Always. If there's a murderee, then there must be a murderer.
Murderee. Is that a good band name? No, it's not. Good ska band name. So let's get around to ranking this bad boy because I'm going to find this hard and we're doing a lot of stalling, a lot of dilly-dallying. How do you feel about summing up your feelings about Eden Lake and possibly strapping some kind of numerical value to it in order to convey a sense of its worth?
I've had some of the edge taken off this film by having seen it multiple times, same with basically everything else. But the first time I saw it, I was thoroughly haunted by the reality of it. I felt like there was bees in my blood. Like it was just, I was just like humming afterwards.
Yeah.
And not in a smelly way, in like a vibrating, nervous energy kind of way.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible film. It's one of the few films, I think, that really, really succeeds, especially in modern times. I mean, it's nearly 20 years old at this point, but like most modern horror doesn't succeed in this way.
Yeah.
And it's very special as a result of that, I think. Obviously, it's capitalizing on real fears that we all have, even if we try and say that we don't. It's capitalizing on real stories from the headlines, whether it be around the mid-2000s when this was made or going way back to, like we say, Stephen Lawrence and Jamie Bulger. And, you know, killer kids is a scary concept. But, like, what I think makes it scarier is that they're not killer kids. They're just kids that are... And things escalate to the point where their sort of teenage shithousery becomes past the point of no return.
Torture and murder.
Yeah. It's bleak.
And burning.
Yeah.
It's not Children of the Corn.
It's not Children of the Corn. It's Children of the Working Class British people. And obviously there's a huge class element to it. Like, that's writ large across the film. It's the whole sort of chav movement of the mid-2000s. And, like, we started to see the sort of chav thing lose its teeth. Obviously, it's pretty loaded classist statement anyway. But we started to see that lose its teeth a bit when it became, like, really popular in terms of, like, we had a rapper called Lady Sovereign. I don't know if you remember Lady Sovereign.
Do I?
Yeah. She had to quit music because she has a thing called cyclic vomiting syndrome.
Yeah.
Which is I don't know what that is, but it sounds like no fun.
It's when you puke up into your nose and then your nose pukes into your mouth and it's just a constant cycle of vomiting 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Well.
It's not true. I made that up completely, sorry.
I mean... I think it's to do with retching. I think she can't control her retching.
Hmm. I met her once and she didn't retch and I felt very flattered.
Nice. Was she trying to get you out? Like, was she trying to get somewhere and you were in the way and she walked past and went, make way for the SOV?
I knew that was coming.
I loved Lady Sovereign.
She's great. Where were we? Who am I?
Again, any non-British people listening to this or anyone that hasn't heard of Lady Sovereign... Maybe just take a little trip to YouTube and watch the video for Love Me or Hate Me, because it's a banger.
Yeah. Lady Sov. Let's wrap this up, because I'm in physical pain. You keep making me watch these English movies, and then you keep making me talk about things that make me want to be dead. What? This is supposed to be fun. What's happening here? Sam's not having any fun.
I'm having fun. In this situation, you're the murderer, and I'm the murderer. I mean, I think this film is basically perfect, Sam. Apart from some foolish things, like the mobile phone thing.
Mm.
And the idea that the kid couldn't have Ray-Ban aviators, or your Ray-Ban aviators. Like, they're not some niche thing, Fassbender.
Yeah.
Everyone and their fucking mum's got Ray-Bans.
Well, that is the class moment, isn't it, I think? Because the kid says they're fakes.
Yeah.
And that's... You know, somehow that justifies this kid having Ray-Bans or whatever. So that's actually quite on the nose. I hadn't remembered that scene. Good thinking.
So I give this film 10 jiggles in the mouth with a Stanley knife out of 12.
Yikes. I'm gonna be quick here. This movie made me feel like I'd have my ass fucked off its hinges. It was horrible to watch. And afterwards, I felt bad for a long time, which means it did a really good job. So I, too, have to give it 9 yuppie condos out of 11, because there's just not... I'd be tempted to give it more, to be honest, because it had such a visceral impact on me. Not one that's going on my rewatch pile, not a Friday night popcorn video rental movie, but definitely a film that sets out to achieve a very specific set of reactions from its audience and does so unflinchingly, hyper-violently, and with a really crystal clear vision and a precision of execution that you have to take your hat off to. So well done, you bastards. Now go away.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, you will watch this again in a couple of years when maybe you're with someone and you're like, I want to make this first person feel something.
I never get that feeling, ever. And when I do, I just get over
suppress
it.
Suppress it.
Yeah, just play them a song. the thing that got me here is Claire said to me, we've seen this. And I was like, I don't recognize it. And about 15 minutes in, I was like, I still don't recognize it. And at the end, I went, I definitely have never fucking seen that film before in my life. I would remember, unless I completely, you know, psychologically blocked it out. But it leaves a lasting impression. Look at it that way.
Definitely.
It's going into the... Whoops, all Eden Lake category in my mind, that's for sure. And it's a place I don't want to go on holiday.
Yeah, I mean, it's very pretty.
I didn't even think it was very pretty, and I am just never revisiting Eden Lake. Thank you for a horrible time. Goodbye.
Well, sorry, Sam. Thank you for bearing with us, listeners. Follow us on socials at FT Horror Show.
Do that, definitely. Doesn't take much, and the rewards are huge.
I mean, the rewards are... I mean, the cost is negligible, so do it.
It's not going to do any harm.
Yeah. Wherever you're listening to this, whip it up, pop a little 5 stars in there, and if you're feeling fruity, drop in a review.
Do it. Go on.
And that's it. We'll see you next time. Or we won't see you, and you won't see us. You'll hear us, and we will hope that you're there.
Well, you really saved that one.
Thanks, mate.